It's okay
to give
you the radio.
Yes, no problem. You can give me.
Good morning all across the nation. This is the Council of Elders show with Mr. Jansen Brooks and his special guest who he will introduce. I would like to invite everyone to listen in this morning because it's going to be a rousing show. Please stand by for Mr. Brooks.
Good morning, everybody. 10 a.m. on the West Coast. Today is January the 23rd, and you're listening to the Council of Elders talk show. I just want to say that January is going by pretty quickly, and we've only got another week in this month, and we'll be on to February and Valentine's. Something else to get you to spend a little money on your Valentine. Today, let me just start off by saying that I want to welcome everybody, and I'd like to for any new listeners, let you know about the purpose of the Council of Elders. The purpose is for older people, elders, if you will, to give advice, counsel, and life experience to younger people. Advice that can help them navigate through life, deal with issues, and avoid some of the pitfalls that can affect everyone. The concept is based historically on African culture, where elders in the community had council members to help guide and encourage tribe members, settle disputes, etc. Young people are especially invited to call in today with questions or issues. Our dream is to have a Council of Elders group or organization in every community in America, and for the Council of Elders to be known about in the community so that people could have an opportunity to get advice from elders about their concerns. But it first starts with a single Council of Elders group, so we're assembling a group of elders here in the Sacramento, California area. I'd like to have about 10 volunteers. Once we get enough volunteers, we can go to youth centers, juvenile halls, boys and girls clubs, churches, etc. We can also be available to young adults as well. Sometimes they need advice on how to raise kids, how to get along in their careers, their marriages, etc. Moving forward, this is an effort to bridge the gap between young people and elders. The younger generation today and the older generation should start to merge. Our Council of Elders is an effort to do so. And I've asked one of the elders, Brother Ron Rogers, to research on the various Council of Elders in the country. My goal is for us to start to communicate with each other. I was finding that there are some scattered Council of Elders group throughout the country, but it's just here and there, and there's really no organization. So we will start to communicate with them and try to link us all up together so that we can help one another. But without further ado, we have a continuation of last week's show with Mr. Ron Marshall. And Mr. Marshall was kind enough to come back with us the second week. We had some technical difficulties last week, and he was kind enough to come back and visit with us today. Ron, how you doing today, man?
I am blessed and highly favored, and I know that.
Amen. Well, I know we had a little talk last week about your high school days. And after high school, did you get right into the Army? Did you go right to Vietnam, or just what happened?
No, after high school, I went right into the Army. I had some responsibility. I had a wife at 17 and a baby on the way. And so I went right into the military. I was planning on going to college, Morgan State College, which is now Morgan State University. But all that changed because I had responsibility. I didn't want to work down at the U.S. Steel, so I knew I had to get a job because my daddy told me, you got some responsibility. I've raised you a certain way that you care of my name. Don't bring any dishonor to my name. And so I went in the military, in the United States Army, right after that I did my basic at Fort Jackson, South Carolina. And then I went did my AIT dev, and I went on to jump school at Fort Benning, Georgia, in Columbus. And from there, I got signed to Fort Campbell, Kentucky, the 101st Airborne Division. It wasn't until it was then that I didn't go to Vietnam until 1967. So I left, got there to Vietnam in around the first week in July of 1967. And did a year there and came back to Fort Campbell, spent about a year and a half, and then had to go back again.
Okay, let me just ask you about what you were doing. You say you went to jump school. Were you jumping out of planes over in Vietnam?
No. You know, that was, you know, one of the dumbest things that ever happened in Vietnam was they did have a jump. Some paratroopers had jumped with the 163rd, and there's no honor. But a lot of them were shot down and killed. Whoever ordered that operation was a dumb commander, and it did a lot of damage to the morale of the 163rd Airborne. They were the ones that jumped. Thank God I wasn't part of that, but it was something that should not have happened. I don't know if anybody with experience was over there said, but most of the people know that the 163rd took a lot of loss because of some dumb decision that the paratroop into a particular area wasn't necessary. That's
right,
all I
right,
can
right.
say about that.
Yeah. One thing I just thought about asking you, you know, we're getting ready to have the first African-American to be the cabinet for the Department of Defense head. I think his name is Lloyd something. Did you ever run into him or hear about him over there?
No, I didn't. You understand now. He's been in the service for 41 years. I've been retired 35 years since I left the Army. 35 years.
Right.
I've been retired 41 years in the military. He's only been out about 4 or 5. I think that's why he had to get a waiver in order to become the Secretary of Defense. You have to be out. I mean, for to hold that position, you got to be out of the military at least 7 years. And
right.
So he was a young man. You know, like I said, I met Colin Powell when I was in Vietnam, and he was just a captain at that time. So Colin Powell was a lot more older and seasoned than the new Secretary of Defense. But no, I never had the opportunity to meet him. But like I said, I don't believe he was even in the service at that time. Could have been. I don't know.
Right.
But like
well,
I said, I've been retired 35 years.
Right. Well, I just reason to ask you because I just heard of the guys, you know, when he got nominated. I didn't go to the military or anything, so.
No, he actually got nominated, and guess what? The vote was 98-2.
Wow,
98-2. The only two people in the Senate voted against his nomination. So that's outstanding. That's outstanding.
Yep.
And I'm very happy. I'm very happy for him.
Right, right. I'm happy for him, too, because I saw part of his interviewing before the senators, and he spoke real well for himself. Went to West Point, and he just had a really outstanding career over there. But now, how did you meet Colin Powell?
I met him at MACV headquarters. I think he was a captain or a major that time. I was up there on a detail for my unit for 2 days of CDY, and I had opportunity. To him, he was just another officer, but I had I just happened to meet him. He wasn't no big guy. He wasn't no what he is today. He was just another officer in the United States Army. Just like the President of the United States, I had an opportunity to meet Barack Obama. I met him when he was a young man in Hawaii. My son went to the same school he went to. So, who thought? So these things, these roads have crossed before.
Right, right. So you met a young Barack Obama while he was still in high school?
I met him. I think he was called at middle school.
Oh boy, that goes back. Yeah.
Yeah, he's just a young boy.
Right, 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 right. So you, what was your actual duties in Vietnam?
I started off as 11 Bravo, called a 1-1 bullet, at combat infantryman.
Oh boy, combat
infantryman. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Oscar. We have many people who are listening, so I would like to invite you into the conversation. As we said in the military, I'm a retired Army veteran also. Advance and be recognized. And the way you do that is to press 1 if you'd like to make a comment or to speak to our host or our guest. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, so... what was I saying? Your duties in you was a combat veteran, you say, a combat over there.
I was infantry, a ground pounder.
Oh, okay.
For those infantrymen, you're assigned to a platoon and you're broken down into a squad, and that's what you do. You go out on patrol to do the things that you have to do.
Oh, okay. So you had to sleep at night in tents and whatnot?
A lot of times I was we'd be out on patrol. We weren't sleeping. Well, we had a buddy system we slept with mess over us, because of, you had to deal with the mosquitoes. The malaria was very, very prevalent in Vietnam, when you go out on patrol, you're out on patrol, so you're out in the field, out in the jungle, and so you work together as a unit. You're out there to engage the enemy. You're out there to engage the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
So when you talk about engaging, we talk about engagement, you're out there to kill.
Right, right. Did you ever get into any gunfights over there?
I got into many, and I thought I was all about this. I thought I was all about that. But as I look over the years, I know that it was that I had the grace of God had His arms around me, and He protected me, because there's a lot of situations that I got involved, got into, that was only through His grace and mercy that I'm here today to be able to talk about it.
I bet you.
I'm not one to really want to talk about war, but because it's about survival. It's about survival.
Right.
I mean, I did what I had to do in order to survive.
Right.
People that talk about war, they want to talk about it. That's them. I know what I did. I know what I experienced, but I don't talk a lot about it. I did do a lot of talking about some of my experiences because of, I often tell people, asking for help is never a sign of weakness. It's a sign of strength. And I know that God put people in my life for a reason. So I went and got counseling because I was not the same person. My daddy told me, you're not the same person that left here. I don't know you. And the reason why he didn't know me, because of some of my behavior and attitudes. And so I realized early on that I needed to get some help, some counseling. I had to deal with some things that I experienced in Vietnam. I had nightmares. I got to the point that I never slept in the same bed with my wife because I was always afraid that I might do something physically to her, not realizing that. So I had a lot of things to work on when it comes to Ron Marshall. And so I sought help, and I'm grateful for that today that I was able to address these issues of what can happen when you are in combat and understand that life conditions don't ever change for you and I, that we always have to change the life conditions. So if any man says that he can do this all by himself, well, that's not a wise plan. I know I needed help. I was reluctant to get it because I allowed my ego and pride to get in the way. But when you go through enough pain, you realize that you need to do something. And I realized that I needed some professional help, and I sought it, and I got it, and it's made me a better man today. Nothing to be ashamed of to get some mental health counseling. The best of the people have done that. So for those who out there are listening, if you're going through some stuff and you can't handle it, seek out some professional mental health counseling. You'll benefit greatly from it. If you're not being weak, you're being strong. It's a sign of strength. It's never a sign of weakness.
Michael, that's your cue.
Well, good morning, Mr. Marshall. How you doing? I'm Michael Gant. I'm one of the members of the Council of Elders here, and I really appreciate your experiences in the military. I have 15 years of combined military experience myself. I started off with in 1973, several years after you, of course. I was assigned to Fort Lewis, Washington, with the 2nd and 60th Mechanized Infantry. I was a cook there, but I also got an opportunity to spend many, many exercises with the infantry soldiers. Our soldiers, of course, again, were mechanized, so we used our Army personnel carriers, but we did a lot of, we did a lot of sleeping out of doors, not in tents. Sometimes didn't even have a sleeping bag. But what I really want to commend you on is the fact that you came back from Nam, and you realized that you needed some assistance. I wasn't as fortunate. I was 57 years old when I found out that I was suffering from mental illness, but I certainly was relieved and glad to have done so. I now am a what we call a peer supporter, peer advocate for mental health. I facilitate support groups I'm working with other nonprofits in the Sacramento area. And I want to co-sign on what you said, that if anybody out there and is needing help, please seek it. Over the years, the biggest help that I had was my faith in God. But now with that continued and my recovery with therapy, I've turned the page so now what I do is I give back. And again, okay. Thank you very much for all of you that you have contributed to our country and to your community.
Okay. You know, a lot of people are not aware, but there's been statistics that's been documented that on the average here in the United States, you have 44 attempted suicides by veterans every day, and 22 are successful. 22 and 22 adds up to what? I think it's 44 by my last count.
Right. So it didn't take you very long to realize after you got back, Brother Marshall, that you needed some help and you went ahead and got it. So that's good.
No, it did. It took me about 5 or 6 years. You know, I often tell the story that when I came back on my first tour back in 1968, well, you know, Martin Luther King had got assassinated back in April of 1968, and we didn't even know about it. All I knew was that I wasn't getting no mail for about 3 or 4 weeks. And I used to get mail every day. I used to get a care pack from my mom and my wife, and my brothers and sisters would send me stuff. And aunts, you know, I had to come from a big family, and I had a big extended family. So my aunts, you know, my mother had 8 sisters, and they was always sending me something, you know, a package, a care package, they called it. And all of a sudden, no mail, no nothing. Nobody could understand why. So morale was kind of low. And we didn't find out about it. Later on, I heard it on Good Morning. I heard it on the Armed Forces Radio that Martin Luther King had been assassinated. It's about 3 and a half weeks later. And because the command didn't want nobody to know about it. They didn't want nobody to know that he had been assassinated. And the riots were going on out here in the United States. And that's why mail was being held up. People weren't getting no mail. A lot of people wanted to act crazy. I'm turning my weapon in. I ain't doing this and I ain't doing that. That's crazy. You're in a war zone. I remember when brother asked me, man, you turn your weapon in? I said, do you know where we are? We're in a war zone. I got a wife and a baby back home to take care of. I ain't doing nothing. I'm going to be here to do what I got to do and get back home safely. And I remember when I came back, we landed in Tacoma. Syntac, Seattle, Tacoma, and we landed at that base out there. I forgot the name of the base, Wright Patterson. I don't know what forgot the name of that base, but we had SeaTac is where we landed in. And those days, you came off the tarmac. You didn't go into the planes and weren't going into the terminal like that. You had to get off the plane, walk down, and walk to the terminal. And they had some protests out there. I got down on my knees and kissed the ground. And when I got up, I got bombarded with some eggs and tomatoes. That's what happened. They bussed us over to Fort Lewis and told us and took us down to we got processed and everything. They took us down to the PX and we got some civilian clothes. And that's what I went home with, in civilian clothes. So they didn't want us to wear a uniform. I mean, that's how bad it was. Couldn't wear your military uniform.
Yeah, it's kind of unfortunate because you guys, some got drafted, some went for various reasons, and then you came back and got disrespected like that. But how did that make you feel? Did you deal with it okay?
When I was angry, I was confused. I had a lot of issues going on, and then there was a lot of stuff going on back in Baltimore, Maryland, like I said, Martin Luther King got assassinated in April, and so you go into different areas in Baltimore, and a lot of burning was going on. It just didn't look the same, and so, but I was happy to be home. You know, I was just happy to be home, but like I said, there was a lot of confusion going on within me, who I was, and because when I was in Vietnam, you know, I wasn't into the drugs. We had plenty of drugs over there, but I was into a drug, but it was a legal drug called alcohol. And so we had our own clubhouse in our company, and the alcohol was available there. There's an old story that I can share with you. My first day in country, before I went to my unit, we was in Longbend. They used to call that LBJ, Lyndon Baines Johnson, called Longbend. And they had, and I was a sergeant in E5, they had a guard duty called a soda point. And this place had trucks coming in and out all through the day, all through the night, picking up beer, wine, soda, and all that liquor that they stored out in one large field. I mean, maybe three or four football fields full. And we had to guard that. You either did that or they had two duties when you come. You could do soda point duty, or they had another duty where you could burn solid waste that came out of our body. I took the soda point duty. I'm in a big complex, just full of pallets, full of beer, wine, soda, and other alcohol beverages. And that was distributed throughout the club system throughout Vietnam. Yes, indeed, out of South Vietnam. So alcohol was very much prevalent and available. And I never drank any alcohol till I went to Vietnam. But I sure, that's when I got introduced to it. And when I came back home, I remember drinking that day. It was hot in Baltimore. My mother and father giving me a welcome home party. And I actually passed out from alcohol. And I got hosed down by my dad with a hose. He knew exactly what to do and had to go to the hospital. And I had went into an alcoholic coma. And that's what my father told me. I don't know you. This is not the man that left to go to Vietnam. I don't know you. And I knew right then and there I had to, that I was dealing with some stuff. But I wasn't, I could have been stationed at Fort Meade, Maryland, right outside of Baltimore. I got my orders changed. And I said, I got to get away from my family. They don't understand me. And I got assigned to Hawaii. Went to Hawaii to 25th Infantry Division, and that's when I realized I needed to get out of the infantry. And so when I reenlisted, I was able to go to school, and that's when I was able to get into a safer occupation. And I became a personnel, which we now call human resources. So I helped manage people's careers. So I got into personnel, and that. Because I didn't want to take a chance. So my second tour, when I got called back to go back to Vietnam, it was 1970, I went back over there as a personnel management specialist. But it took about 5 years, brother, for me to realize that that help was there. And because, you know, I had a tremendous ego. I was raised in the church. I grew up in the church, but I had lost a lot of what I really believed in. You know, I did all the things. I took my wife. I took my two children to church, but I did it to satisfy my wife more so to be a good example. But I wasn't into God like I am now. So I had to grow. It was about five or six years before I really realized that I needed help, and I got that help. and it's helped me grow ever since.
That's good.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I would just like to remind everyone you're listening to the Council of Elders show with host Mr. Jason Brooks and his special guest, veteran Ron Marshall. He is relaying his experiences in the military and the things and the lessons that he's learned. If anyone would like to chime in on the conversation, please press 1. And if you would just like to continue listening, it's a very interesting life. Please just continue to listen. Tell everyone. Go ahead, Mr. Brooks.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Brother Marshall, now you retired from the military, what was it, in 85? What year did you retire?
86. I actually retired on the 1st of August, 1986.
So that's been
35 years.
So what have you been doing post-retirement after you retired from the military?
Well, you know, one day I spent a lot of time doing things with my children and grandchildren. And one day I was taking one of my grandchildren to church, to school. And I picked him up. I did all that. And he said, Papa, he said, you know what? He said, I said, what's that? He said, you're a good chauffeur. That's what he said. I retired from my job at the Treasury in 2000. So I hadn't had a job in all those years. So he said I was a good chauffeur. And I asked myself, is that all I become? My kids were happy because, they had a built-in babysitter, built-in chauffeur, and I said, but. So I decided to go back to school. I went back to school. I got my degree, and I was able to, and the VA was able to pay for it for me to go to school. I'm now a certified drug and alcohol counselor, KDOT. I'm also a certified mental health technician. I went back to school and graduated, and I had a job offer to go to work for the VA. I went for an interview. And then I realized that the restrictions that were going to be placed on me if I took this job. And so instead of taking that job, I volunteered. I took a volunteer position at the Sacramento Veterans Resource Center. And I've been down there for 11 years now as a volunteer, working full-time as a volunteer down there. And I do groups. On dealing with life conditions. I do groups, and I also did benefit counseling, helping veterans get their benefits and what have you. And that's been very rewarding, very rewarding.
Brother Marty, what do you find to be some of the biggest concerns with those veterans that you work with?
Most of them are dealing with, I deal with veterans who become homeless. And their families don't really understand what they have done. I deal with a lot of veterans who have been in combat, and their families don't understand. And because of some of their behaviors, their families have alienated them, don't want them around because of some of the things they've done. A lot of the men and women that I deal with are dual diagnosing. They're dealing with a drug addiction as well as mental health challenges, post-traumatic stress disorder, depression, anxiety, a lot of negative feelings that they're dealing with. And because of their behavior, they've been alienated from their family. They've become homeless based on a lot of decisions they have made. They're good people. They just made some bad choices in their life. So these are the kind of people I deal with. So it's challenging but rewarding to be able to go in and let them know that I've never been homeless, but I've been down that road that you've been down with. I understand that I tell people all the time, you don't have to drink or use even if you want to. You don't have to because you have a choice. There was a time in your life maybe you didn't have a choice, but you have a choice with that. Because all behavior is code behavior. And all behavior is dictated by the choices and decisions that you make. God gives us five basic needs. They are surviving, power, love and belonging, freedom, and fun. One of the most basic needs of that five is power. So we give our power away so easily. And when we give our power away, it makes us uncomfortable. And we make uncomfortable, we make bad choices and bad decisions.
Oscar
so
here.
Anytime that you allow a person to affect your behavior in a negative way, you give power to that behavior as well as to that person. And that's what makes us uncomfortable.
Oscar here. I would just like to say that Mr. Marshall has been a benefit to me personally. I asked him to assist me in my veterans benefits. And when you've been in there, he's talking about some things that are very near and dear to me. Post-traumatic stress disorder is a serious condition. And so for those who need that service, for those who need people to help. But Mr. Michael Gant and Mr. Ron Rogers are definitely, Michael Gant and Mr. Ron Marshall have been instrumental in moving my life forward personally. So I truly encourage you to keep doing what you're doing because you are a benefit to me personally and to society in general. Keep going, Mr. Marshall.
Excuse me, Mr. Marshall. I'm sorry to interject. I just want to also say that, number one, you and I have connected, and I must admit that the reason why we haven't connected again is the fault is on me, but I definitely want to reconnect with you soon. And I'm just so interested in the fact that your military experiences, aside from combat in Vietnam, are so similar to mine. I got out of the Army as a personnel administrative sergeant myself. I was a PSNCO for many years. But one of the things I can't help but wonder, Mr. Marshall, is on January 6th when our nation's capital, was stormed, and disrespected. For me, as a veteran, as a former soldier, I served my country. I served it proudly, and it made me extremely angry to see what was going on at our capital. May I ask, what were your feelings towards that?
Well, I'm going to take you back a little bit before I answer that question. In 1963, we had the march, Dr. Martin Luther King, I Have a Dream march, probably before your time. I was there at that I Have a Dream speak, all those millions of people there, and felt good about it. But did you know that on the U.S. Capitol that day, in August, that day in August, in 1963, there was a machine gun set up in the United States Capitol, on the front of the Capitol, with sandbags around it. Did you hear what that just said? A machine gun set up on the United States when they had the March on Washington, when Dr. King gave his speech, I Have a Dream. And that was a peaceful march. You didn't hear about nobody getting killed or any fighting or any littering or any damage done at all. All those beautiful people there that day, I experienced that. And then we go back to what happened on January 6th, 2021. And you ask yourself that question. You ask yourself that question. Did I answer your question for you?
Yes. I certainly get it. I hope others do.
Yeah, so, Brother Marshall, like to evolve the subject a little bit. I know that you have kids, grandkids, and so forth, successful kids. Can you tell us about a little bit about, you know, your thoughts on raising kids, grandkids, family values, and so forth?
I have two boys and two girls, and I tell my children that I know that I am a very, very good and great grandfather. I know that I'm a good grandfather and great father and grandfather because I've learned with the mistakes that I made with my children, I've been able to be a better grandfather and better great grandfather with my grandchildren. And so one of the things that I realized that I told my children that I had to make a lot of amends to my own children. Now, what do you say, amends? Those are your children. Those are your children. You ain't got to make no amends to them. Yeah, you do. Because I understood that a lot of my behavior affected them. Now, let me just share this with you real quick. You have to ask yourself a question every day. How does the decision and choices you make affect the people that you care about and the people that care about you? There was a time in my life when I was married, raising my children, that I was caught up in a lot of selfishness and self-centeredness and self about who I was and what I was, what my role was. So there's things that I had to make right with all my children. I had to go and ask them for their forgiveness and make amends to them. Now, you know, now most men would look at that as, those are your children. You don't have to explain to them about your faith. Yes, you do, because you have to understand you don't want your children to make some of the choices that you made. And so I don't have no problem telling my grandchildren about some of the bad choices I made in order to let them know that if I give back, all we can do is give our children information. That's all we can do. And demonstrate on how we walk our walk. And so I don't have any problems letting my children and my grandchildren know how much I love them. And I'll tell them every time, I'll always love you, but I don't have to like the things you do. And so when I see my grandchildren or I see my children doing something that I don't think is right, I let them know how I feel. Because I was able to open myself up to my children and let them know, your daddy has made a lot of bad choices in his life. And I've learned from him. And what I've learned is that you don't fail at anything in life if you know what you failed at.
Wait a minute, say that again, brother. Say that again.
You don't fail at anything in life if you've known what you failed at. You only fail if you have not learned what you failed at.
Okay.
And so as a parent, we're going to make mistakes. But we can learn from the mistakes that we've made. And that's why I know that I'm a better grandfather and great-grandfather because I've learned from the mistakes that I made with my children. I know that I'm a better father today because I know who I am today. And I understand that the choices and decisions I make, I realize that I make better choices and decisions today in my life because they have a major effect on the people that I care about and the people that care about me. Oh, it's so wonderful when you can stop to think, should I do this today? Is it going to be a good choice? What kind of effect is it going to have on the people that I love and the people that love me? And trust me, brothers and sisters, you will make better choices when you ask yourself those questions on a daily basis. So what I do a daily inventory of every day that God allows me to walk the earth. I do a daily inventory, and I ask myself the question, has my motive been genuine and sincere? And if they've been genuine and sincere, I've had a good day. If I have not been genuine, then that means I need to take a look. Say, you know, maybe I need to apologize. Maybe I came across too strong. Maybe I said the wrong thing. But I need to, because you know if you've done, if you have not treated the person right, if you have said something. And then it goes back to something my mama used to say about my mouth. She said, make our useful thoughts helpful. And that spells mouth. And she said, if it's not helpful, then zip it up.
Right. So, you know, when I was listening to you, I almost felt like, you know, you got some ideas when you say you, especially about the daily inventory. Is there a book you can point us to that talks about the daily inventory and so forth that you mentioned?
Yes.
Or did
we
you get
that
from
that
another book?
We have a book that I use at the vet center that I also use in our New Joy ministry at St. Paul. It's called The 12 Steps of a Spiritual Journey. It's a good book for anybody that's going through life conditions, called The 12 Steps of a Spiritual Journey. And it's based on biblical teaching. It's based on biblical teaching. And for those that want the book, I strongly recommend it. It's called The 12 Steps of a Spiritual Journey. You can go online and Google it. And it's a working guide for healing. And it's based on biblical teaching, but it's broken down. It would help you, be very helpful to anybody dealing with life conditions, especially with this current living conditions we have today with this pandemic that's going on within this country and in the world.
Right. Well, thank you for that. The 12 Steps of a Spiritual Journey, everybody, if you want to get it. I think I ordered so easy to get books. Now you can just get on your cell phone and order them directly from Amazon.
It's something you can use over and over because you have some. It puts you through the whole book and it asks you questions for you to honestly ask yourself some questions, and it's a teaching thing that you can use over and over and over in your life because
right.
A lot of people are not aware of it. There are 20 major character defects that we all have. We might not have them now, but we've had them, and we've experienced them, and it's something that we can be aware of because they will come back, and it gives you an opportunity to take a look at those. When they arise, again, they normally are these negative character defects normally arise when we allow our behavior. That means when we give our power away, because nobody pushes our button. Nobody really pushes our button. You allow your button to be pushed, or you allow your behavior to be affected by what people say. So I don't buy the. When people, well, he pushed my button, well, he made me mad. No, nobody made you mad. You allowed yourself to become that way.
Right.
Gentlemen, we have 10 minutes of showtime.
Yeah, we have about 10 minutes. And before we wrap it up, Brother Marshall, I'd like you to just, your advice for young people coming along now, maybe 18, 20, 30, younger people, as they're facing their life, what are some of the advice that you would impart to them?
Be your own person. Don't follow trends. Be your own person. Don't follow trends. Don't be a follower. Be a leader. Focus on your goals. And don't let no one ever tell you that you can't get those accomplished. I looked at that young lady that gave the read did a poem on the inauguration, and it brought tears to my eyes. It brought tears to my eyes because the words were so powerful, what she was saying. And she could have been easily discouraged. No, don't you shouldn't do don't do that. But follow your goals. Don't be a follower. Be a leader.
That young lady was
and know that you can do all things. That you can do all things through Christ. Who sent it to. So you got to have the Lord Jesus Christ in your life if you're going to be successful. You're not going to make it without him.
That young lady who gave the poem was the niece of Miss Flossie at our church. And so her aunt is a leader. So we all have the potential to do a lot more than we are doing.
And one of the things that I do with young people, I especially with my grandchildren, I encourage. I never criticize. I let them know if I see they're doing wrong, but I do it in a way that I do it in a way to let them know that I'll tell them I done been down this road before. So I'm showing them empathy. I'm letting them know that I didn't walk this road, and it's not a good road for you to walk. So I let them know that I'm not being judgmental. I'm letting them know that I done been down there before. So I constantly encourage. I don't criticize. I encourage. We don't do enough encouragement, letting people know that you can. You can do this. You got to have a can-do attitude. So encouragement is a powerful thing to give to young people. And you know, when I see, I have a thing about these young men back. They think, but that's a trend. That's all it is. It's a style. It's a trend. And I ask them, why you do that? Well, it's a style. Well, change your style. You go in and try to get a job with your pants hanging down and ask, and you think you're going to get hired? I told my grandson wears these dreads, and he went to college. He got 3 degrees that he graduated from. And he talking about he's a nonconformist. And so I told him, I said, well, we call him Dio. I said, you think you're gonna be able to get a job? Because appearance is people look at your appearance. You can be in the finest suit, but they're going to look at your head and say, oh, no, this don't represent us. But I'm a nonconformist. I said, guess what? Bill Gates, what's the guy that used to be the head of Apple? I can't think of his name right now. He died from cancer. I can't think of him.
Oh,
he's a nonconformist.
That was Steve Jobs.
Steve Jobs. They all were nonconformists. But guess what? They also said that we had to conform in order to be a nonconformist. In other words, they had to be a conform to be become a nonconformist. Because when they became a nonconformist, they had the means and the resources in order to do that. Steve Jobs wearing start wearing black shirts and jeans. Bill Gates got rid of his tie and started wearing shirts and cardigan sweaters. He became the nonconformist that he wanted to be because he had the means in order. His voice was being heard. He put value to his job. He put value to his company. He put both of them there. They put value. So when you have value, people will listen. And that's what I was telling my grandson. You're not going to be able to be what you want to be until you're able to conform to what society expects of you. So your appearance has a lot to do with how people look at you.
Freedom ain't free. And a lot of people gave blood, sweat, and tears in order for you to have the freedom to do it, to be a nonconformist. We have 4 minutes of showtime, so please... if anyone would like to chime in, you better do it quick.
Yes, Brother Ron, you've been quite impressive today, dropping some wisdom on us. We really appreciate it. You know, sometimes you may realize it, but a lot of seniors, they don't realize the wisdom that they have, and they sort of take it for granted. So the wisdom that you have, don't take it for granted. We're going to be having a Youth and Elders Summit on Zoom on February the 20th. It's a Saturday. And if at all possible, I'd like you to join us on that. You don't have to leave your home. It'll all be on Zoom.
February 20th. Yeah, it's going to be
on
a
Saturday.
Ron Rogers, can jump in right quick.
Good morning, Mr. Marshall. Always a pleasure, sir, and I just wanted to, again, thank you for joining us and giving us your biography, if you will, because all of us at our age now, we've lived different lives, and there's only one way to get to God, and that's, I think, what our primary message should be, and you demonstrated that, and you're a sharing person, and again, just wanted to say good morning and thank you.
Okay, well, you know what I've learned? I've learned that transparency has freed me. You know, I don't have time to worry about what other people think of me. It's what I think of myself and my relationship with my Lord Jesus Christ. Because guess what? None of us is qualified to make judgment on anyone. But too often, people are more concerned about what others think of them, which tells me they don't think too highly of themselves.
Yes, I must agree. And that's the kind of thinking that all of us have to get over. It's not about us. You want to be remembered? Help somebody. That's all you have to do. So thank you again, sir. God bless.
Well, thank you. I really believe that helping others has been the spiritual foundation of my continued growth.
Right. Well, we've got a couple of minutes here. Brother Ron, we're getting ready to wrap it up in just a little bit. But again, we want to thank you for coming on. And the way you were talking today, we would like to have you back again one of these days when you're free. Maybe we can take this conversation on a little bit further.
I would be glad to do that. I realize one thing is that you have to stay humble in order to be effective. Because when you start thinking too much about yourself, that's when you usually get in trouble.
Right. Well, we'll close it out right now, and like to let everybody know you're listening to the Council of the Elders show. The number is 516-387-1611, 10 o'clock Pacific. Every Saturday you can call in. Like to close us out in prayer. Heavenly Father, we just thank you for a good show today. Thank you for our guest, Brother Ron Marshall. And thank you for all the listeners that were listening in. We ask you to bless everyone, Lord, and bless our country and bless our world. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
All right, everybody.
Amen.
Tune in next week, same time, same station.